Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Malala Yousafzai, the 14-year-old Pakistani girl who was targeted and nearly killed by the Taliban, is now on her way to the United Kingdom for medical treatment. All she wanted was an education for herself and for other girls. In Karachi, tens of thousands of Pakistanis took to the streets on Sunday, carrying placards with her picture. Around the world, Malala has become the poster child, the public face of girls and women living in fear of the Taliban. U.S. troops will soon leave Pakistan's next-door neighbor, Afghanistan. That's sparking fresh concern for the safety of girls and women there, where the Taliban fights to return. This hour on Point, Malala's story, the Taliban and what women face in Pakistan and in Afghanistan as the U.S. prepares to go. You can join the conversation. What does the world owe these girls, these women, Pakistanis? What's going on in your country with the Taliban? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Malala had made a big name for herself over the years of the Taliban's occupation of the Swat Valley, where she lived, where her father was prominent in education and more. In 2009, in a New York Times documentary, then 11-year-old Malala spoke about her dreams of a profession and how they were different from the hopes her father had for her. You'll hear her first, then her dad.
I want to become a doctor. It's my own dream, but my father told me that you have to become a politician. But I don't like politics.
But I see a great potential in my daughter that she can do more than a doctor. She can create a society where a medical student would be easily able to get her doctorate degree.
She can, she could, she might have. Last week, the Taliban put a bullet in her head. Here she was in 2009, again, 11-year-old Malala, talking about her passion for education and determination to defy the Taliban.
They cannot stop me. I will get my education, if it is in home, school, or any place. This is our request to the all world, there to save our school, save our world, save our Pakistan, save our Swat.
Our request to the whole world. And here she was just in last November in an interview with CNN explaining how she would handle the Taliban if she were president of Pakistan.
First of all, I would like to build so many schools in this country because education is the must thing. If you don't have educated people, so the Taliban will come to your area. But if you have educated people, they will not come.
Last week, they came onto the school bus, the van, where she was riding with the other girls from her school. Several shot, Malala shot in the head. Now, with all that damage, she's on her way to, or maybe at this point, in the UK for treatment there. We're going to go first to Pakistan. Owais Tawheed joins us. He heads the Pakistani news channel, ARY News. He is known Malala and her family for years, wrote a touching article for the Christian Science Monitor last week headlined, "My Conversations with Malala Yousafzai, the Girl Who Stood Up to the Taliban." Owais Tawheed, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
How do you know this family? How long have you known them, Owais?
I have known the family since things changed in Sabahat, and I used to visit Sabahat and in the Northwest quite frequently before joining the TV channel, which is ARY, it's a private TV channel in Pakistan. I used to write for the Wall Street Journal. I have worked for BBC World Service for years, and I've AFP and then the Christian Science Monitor. So I would sort of travel a lot in the tribal region, which neighbors Afghanistan, and in Afghanistan as well. I've spent almost 18 months during Taliban's time in Afghanistan before 9/11. Oh. But Tom, as I speak to you, I could see the live picture shown on foreign TV channels and local TV channels about the air ambulance, which carries Malala Yousafzai, who is struggling for life, and it has landed at Birmingham Airport. The big girl, she's being going to be shifted to Queen Elizabeth Hospital in the UK, and she is accompanying with a consultant and specialist, neuro specialist of Pakistan military, and what we know that, you know, sort of that she is also accompanying a British lady who is a specialist in neuro rehabilitation and neurosurgery. So, and she is with her family, with her father, and two young brothers. So it's very emotional.
Yes, OS, we understand that an air ambulance sent from the United Arab Emirates that's taken her, and you say you can see her landing as we speak in Birmingham in the UK. What's the latest you know about her health? Is it clear at this point that she will survive? We'll get to recuperation, but how stable is her health, her survival, OS?
In the daytime, obviously it's evening in Pakistan, and sun has set, and it has set on her beautiful valley of Sawat as well. But till now, everybody is praying. The kids of the schools and elders in their prayers throughout the local TV channels showed the pictures, and in Sawat, her injured friend who was accompanying her on that day when she was shot by Taliban when she was returning from his school, she also prayed, and we showed, and local TV channels showed all those prayers and wishes. But what I know of health by the surgeons and by the specialists and by the spokesperson of the hospital where she was admitted in Rawalpindi, which is near the capital city of Islamabad, that she needs repair and replace of damaged bones of her skull and needs long-term neuro rehabilitation.
OS Tawheed, we know you're close to the family. We can hear the emotion in your voice. We've heard it in other voices out of Pakistan. We really appreciate your report today from Karachi, where there were big demonstrations in support of Malala this weekend. OS Tawheed, heading Pakistan's news channel ARY News, thank you very much for joining us, OS.
Pleasure.
Let's go to Islamabad, Pakistan, right now, the capital, and Samina Ahmed. She is South Asia Project Director for the International Crisis Group. Samina, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be back.
Can you tell us about reaction within Pakistan in the last week to this terrible shooting? How has the country responded? We saw big demonstration in Karachi, but we read reports of rather small ones elsewhere. How are Pakistanis responding?
You have to remember that this is a country in which people are afraid to come out. They're afraid to say anything that the Taliban might find. And yet, there might be small demonstrations. What matters is people came out, and they came out in the hundreds. You don't need a rally of hundreds of thousands of people. What you really need from shopkeepers to your average Joe saying, you know what, enough is enough. They have targeted this child, these people, and their behavior is completely unacceptable. And that is the sentiment countrywide.
Actually, here's a little sound from Karachi, candlelight vigil held in Karachi. This was last Thursday night.
Ek Nahat Ki Marzi Se. Ek Nahat Ki Marzi Se.
People gathering there holding signs saying attack on Malala a new low even for Taliban and attack on Malala is a cowardly act. And again, here's her voice, Malala herself from last December interview with CNN saying the girls need to speak out for justice.
God will ask you on the day of judgment that where were you when your people were asking you, when your school fellows were asking you, and when your school was asking you that I am being blown up. When your people need you, you should come up, you should come, and you should stand up for their rights.
Malala, before the shooting, Samina Ahmed, the last time we saw a video that went around the world from SWAT of a young woman being whipped by the Taliban after an affair or something, and that had Pakistanis so up in arms that the army went in to the SWAT Valley at that point. Do you expect some kind of big official response to this shooting by the Pakistan government?
The military did go in, and that's because public sentiments were incredibly high, as indeed they are today. And what people are calling for now is not another military house the militants to away and come back to fight another day, but a decisive action that will get rid of them, but get rid of them forever. In other words, operations have been held several times, but all that happens is the militants melt away, the militants come back. And what people are demanding now, and that's the media, it's the average citizen, is, look, you've got to hold these folks accountable for their crimes.
But isn't that difficult in a country where many politicians have expressed a lot of sympathy with Islamic fundamentalists, if not militants themselves, Samina?
On the contrary, all the major political parties, and, you know, it's a two-party system, much like the U.S., the two large parties, the ruling party, the People's Party, the opposition party, Sharif's Muslim League, have strongly condemned this act of violence. They have called for action. But we have to remember one thing, that the voices that you hear that actually say, well, you know, the Americans are responsible and it's because it's a reaction to drone attacks that the militants attack young people, young girls like Malala.
We'll look at it all. Samina, hold that thought. We'll look at it all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the young Pakistani girl Malala shot by the Taliban for championing girls' right to an education and the fate of women in Pakistan and in Afghanistan next door when the U.S. goes. Samina Ahmed has been with us from Islamabad in Pakistan, South Asia Project Director for the International Crisis Group. Her team's latest report is Pakistan, No End to Humanitarian Crises, released last week. You can read some from it. There's a link at our website, onpointradio.org. Lots of people responding online. Razia Hussein writes, as a young Pakistani girl, I remember having a tacit fight with the society on what I could learn and where I could go to learn. She writes to us, my parents, like Malala's, were very supportive, but the society was not. Wrapped in the white chador, we waged our crusade then, and it's heartbreaking, she writes to us, to see that she still has to fight that war that should have been long won. But she now shot, flown out of Pakistan at this point to the United Kingdom. Jim writes, I pray for this courageous lady. I hope she'll live to fulfill her dreams. Samina, please stand by there in Islamabad. Shela is calling from Anchorage, Alaska. Shela, thanks. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling because I had a chance to spend 4 days in the Yousafzai's home in April this year.
Really? Are you Pakistani, Shala?
I'm a Pakistani-American, but I've lived here for a very long time.
And you were there in the SWAT Valley in Malala's family's home?
In her room.
Wow. Tell us about it. What did you witness there?
I stayed in her room. I'm sorry.
What did you see? What did you witness? Tell us about her and her family.
Oh, she was just bright and lively and spunky and full of vim and vigor and stood up to her father and... you know, he was thinking about sending her to the boarding school near Islamabad later on this year or soon enough. But she said she didn't want to go because she did not want to leave her beloved Valley of Swat, her family and her friends. She told me when we spoke, and I had several long conversations with her, she, you know, we talked about different things, about her desire for an education, and she said she really wanted an education, but she wanted to finish her education in Pakistan before she even thought about going abroad. And when the Taliban say that she's westernized, I can tell you that she absolutely, absolutely is not westernized, not in the sense that we think of what westernization is. This child wore a shalwar kameez and a dupatta at all times that I have seen her, that I, all the time that I spent with her. She told me that the only thing that she wants to learn from the West are its good things that she can incorporate, that when she became prime minister, she wants to do the things that are good all over the world, that she wants to bring peace to Pakistan and lay down our arms, and the only thing we should strive for is peace in this world.
Shella, where did she get the courage to stand up in the face of the Taliban when it was obvious the damage that they could do to her, her family? Where did she get that courage?
It's her faith. I had met them early in Karachi, and I had, that morning when I met them, I had learned about a threat on her life. And when I saw them in Karachi before I went to Savas, she said, I told them that there was this threat. And they looked shocked. They had not even seen it because it was the internet kind of buried in Google News or something. And she just looked at me very calmly, and I said, are you frightened, Malala? She said, no. Death and life are in Allah's hand. There's nothing I can do about that. The only thing I can do is fight for the right of children to education, especially girls.
So, Shella, step back for a second. We'll take this to Samina Ahmed and to Bina Sarwar, who's going to join us in a moment. But how does Pakistan change this situation where the Taliban has such sway, such freedom of action, that they can take such a prominent young woman like this and shoot her in the head in full daylight? How does this change in Pakistan, or does it not?
The only way it can change, as it would change in any country in the world, is you've got to have rule of law. You've got to throw the book at these folks who commit crime. This was a crime to be treated as. And I think is where the Pakistan time is done. It's the police that needs to investigate. It's the police that needs to judge. If you don't hold militants accountable through the rule of law, then I think we have a problem on our hands. Military operations are not the answer. The law is the answer.
Samina Ahmed with the International Crisis Group in Islamabad. I'm sorry our line is rough, but we're so glad to have had you with us for a few minutes today. Samina, thank you very much for joining us there. We're very grateful to you. Shella, Pakistani journalist calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. What's your sense of how can this change? How would it change? What do you say, Shella?
The only way I think it can change is if there is a really big military operation and if somehow the people of Pakistan stand up and say, we've had enough. This cannot go on anymore. And it should not go on anymore. This young child, who may never be the same again. I hope she is. But you know, I mean, this has hurt me as much as anybody else. I saw her up close. I mean, this child ironed my clothes for me, for God's sakes. I can't say enough. Something has to change in Pakistan. It's the apathy of the Pakistani people that has to be driven out of the country, out of the people's heart and soul.
Shall I stick with us for a second? Here is sound yesterday of a Pakistani military spokesman in Rawalpindi outside the capital. This is before Malala was flown to the UK, saying that at that point, saying here that her condition was stable.
Malala is still on ventilator. They reduced her sedation today in order to carry out a better clinical assessment by the neurosurgeons. That happened. Malala did respond to that. And she did move her four limbs.
We'll see. Here's a woman at a candlelight vigil for Malala in Karachi last Thursday expressing her outrage at the shooting.
I think the whole of this country should be ashamed of themselves if they don't stand up for this girl, because she is somebody's daughter.
She is somebody's daughter, Pakistan's daughter. On Friday, Pakistani Prime Minister Raja Pervez Ashraf visited Malala in the hospital and spoke of her courage.
The extremists attacked Malala for what she stands for, because they were scared of the power of her vision. She had a simple message, the right for girls to be educated. Malala is a true Pakistani and is the real face of Pakistan.
Pakistan's prime minister there lauding her simple message. He said the right for girls to be educated. With me in the studio right now is Beena Sawar, Pakistani journalist, documentary filmmaker, currently a fellow at the Ash Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Beena Sawar, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
What are we witnessing here?
I think this is we can see a clash of values. It's a clash of, I agree with Samina Ahmed when she says that it's a criminal act. And really what we're seeing is a breakdown of law and order in Pakistan. We're seeing the nexus of criminal elements with so-called religious parties and groups. And involved in all that are also drug mafias and arms mafias. So there are a lot of people with a vested interest in keeping Pakistan on the boiling pot to keep these groups viable. It's a business.
Now, let me just say this in an unvarnished way, because a girl has been shot, and
yes,
it's very upsetting.
Yes.
And our sense from outside, this is, you tell us, but that is that many in Pakistani politics, in the government, in the intelligence service, have played a kind of game of cooperation, of, you know, sort of dancing behind the curtain with some of these same forces who pulled out a gun and shot her in the head last
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. They've been running with the hares and hunting with the hounds. That's what a lot of people in Pakistan's security establishment have been doing. This is the first time, I think, that an elected government, it is not a policy of the elected government to use these people as their quote-unquote strategic assets that they have been used as since the time of the first Afghan war in the 1980s.
But this has gone on a long time now, and from outside, again, it can appear that many Pakistanis are sympathetic with the with a fundamentalist Islamic view of the world. They're upset about a lot of things, many understandable. American drones going after Al-Qaeda, Taliban have killed civilians in Pakistan. Obviously, it's an offense to Pakistani sovereignty. We understand people being upset about that. But how do you sort of break down the Pakistani society? What portion is sympathetic with a very fundamentalist Islamic view of the world and maybe reluctant to criticize even the Taliban? Help us understand the array of views.
So I think you can see how Pakistanis think when we are allowed to go to the polls. These so-called religious parties have never been voted into power. They have never received more than, until Musharraf's time, they never received more than 3 or 4% of the total vote. In Musharraf's time, when the political leadership was out of the country and there was a huge vacuum, they got, I think, 11 or 12%. That's as much as they are ever going to get, I think, in Pakistan. So they know that they are not going to come into power through the ballot, so they choose the bullet.
So who's not rooting them out in the Swat Valley? The army went, the military went in, and still it's not gone, and still the Northwest Territories are there. Is somebody protecting them? Is there a kind of political power among people in Pakistan that could rise up and say, stop this, these militants cannot have a place here, or not?
Well, the political leadership of Pakistan has been saying that. And like I said, this is the first government that, if it completes its term, will be the first government ever in Pakistan to do so and hand over power to the next elected government. We have been denied a continuation of the political process, of the democratic political process. So we've had a very broken
coups
up.
Coups and takeovers,
often support, and with military dictators supported by Washington and Saudi Arabia and other countries, other foreign powers. So we've had all that. Now, moving ahead, so we have a government now that is saying this exact thing that you're saying, that we need to get rid of these people and we need to take decisive action. And you have this tussle between the security establishment and the political establishment of Pakistan, which until this government took over power was the same thing. The security establishment of Pakistan formulated and ran policy related to economic, finance, defense, and foreign policy. Now you have a political government trying to assert itself in all three realms, and the security establishment saying, we will do this. This is what we can do. This is what we cannot do. And as far as going after the militants militarily, of course, then you have to listen to what the security establishment is saying. If they're saying we cannot or we will not, the government can't force them to do that.
At least at this point in
Pakistan.
Shella, in Anchorage, Alaska, Pakistani journalist calling in. What's your sense of how or whether this situation for Pakistani women can change? What will that require?
It will require a big infusion of money to build schools, to allow girls to go to school in every part of Pakistan, not in the big cities. The government schools have to be strengthened. They are the schools that most people can afford to send their children to because the fees are so small.
Yep.
People cannot afford to send their children to elite schools, the ones in English medium, the ones that are in the big city. It's places like Sawat, places like Aghan Valley, places up in Gilgit, Hunza, the far-off flung places where the militants are at this time. That's where the people need to see the money.
But where will that money come from? I mean, the government doesn't have a lot of money. The United States is increasingly reluctant to do it. The Saudis aren't going to pay for a girl's education. Sorry?
The United States has given billions of dollars. Nobody knows where the money goes. I talk to people when I go to Pakistan every year. I go to Pakistan every year, and when I speak to people, I speak to the common people, my driver, people in the streets, people in, not in the streets, but in the shopkeepers that I meet. And they all say, where has the money gone that the U.S. has given us? There is no accountability for it. There should be benchmarks for us to know, us meaning the us Americans to know, where the money that we give Pakistan is going. There are ghost schools that have been funded in Pakistan, and when you go and look at them, there's nothing there, just a shell, empty schools.
Well, given the way this relationship has gone lately, U.S.-Pakistan, it's hard to see a whole lot more flowing there. But Shella, calling in from Anchorage, Alaska today, we're so grateful for your firsthand account of the time right there in Malala's room with her. Thank you so much for calling, Shella.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Diane in Norfolk, Virginia. Diane, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. You do ask for solutions, and I think we all would like to find some easy solution, but I think that it's actually true that pre-Taliban time, very few girls went to school in the Swat Valley. It's a traditional Islamic valley where people keep purdah, they separate men from women, they separate the genders, and girls' education is not priority for the typical Islamic society. So I think reform of ideology, reform of religion has to come before there are any solutions that will play out in the society in a larger way.
So you're saying it doesn't take the Taliban to put women in a kind of a second-class status in this region?
No, it already exists.
Thank you for your call, Diane. I mean, Bina, you're nodding along with that. So that leaves Americans thinking, okay, what are we even? Where should our hearts be supporting here? Let alone our pocketbooks.
Well, you have to support, like Diane said, you need to support the education. I mean, and yes, certainly there was a little girl's education in Swat before, but Swat has traditionally been a very cultured, peaceful, and a relatively highly educated population, and this situation of girls being, discouraged from education has nothing to do with Islam, which exhorts men and women to, obtain education from the cradle to the grave.
Well, I mean, we know how religions evolve and they emerge, and you say it has nothing to do with Islam, but here our caller Diane says spent time there, and it is that region's interpretation of traditional Islam that brings purdah, brings no school for girls. She's saying it's going to take a reform of Islam as practiced, at least in that part of the country, to bring a change.
Well, yes, that is so, and that is happening. And I think that the conflict we see is related to that change that is happening. You see a huge number of girls and women going to schools and colleges in Pakistan, and you see them out in the streets. They're working in the factories. They're working in, offices, they're everywhere.
Do they think that this threat to their freedom is just something on the frontier, just something in the distance, or does it feel like a threat to women all around Pakistan at this point?
Tom, there's a threat to women all around Pakistan, all around South Asia. I've been in conversation with friends in India, particularly about this, where people are really horrified at this. And a lot of friends in India are relating it to their own situations in India and talking about the violence against women, about the general misogynist culture that exists in South Asia, and what trends like Taliban or other retrogressive trends tend to do is to reinforce those negative cultural practices, which people in Pakistan had been starting to get out of, started to, it's a development process. And it's pushed back these Taliban forces. It's a reaction precisely to the modernization of Pakistan, which includes girls and women going out. When they aren't going out, there's no point of conflict.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the young Pakistani girl Malala shot by the Taliban for championing girls' right to an education. The fate of women, girls in Pakistan and in Afghanistan next door when the U.S. goes protest there. That was in Islamabad on Saturday, protesting the attack. UK stepping up. Here was British Foreign Secretary William Hague speaking with reporters today in Luxembourg. He said that Malala was on her way to the United Kingdom for medical treatment.
We offered last Thursday, our help to the government of Pakistan in caring for her because she does need particular specialist care. Now, the Pakistani authorities have taken us up on that offer, and so she will be on her way today from Rawalpindi to be cared for in a National Health Service hospital.
The British Foreign Secretary, many writing online, Ali Khan says it is mind-boggling to see the free hand given to the Taliban in Pakistan to make open threats that they will kill Malala's father now. It cannot be more shameful than this. Pakistanis, he writes, please stand up to this homegrown terror. When will you? When it's your daughter, Ali, writing at our website. Beena Sarwar joins us in the studio today, Pakistani journalist and documentary filmmaker. Also with us right now from Kabul, Afghanistan, Andisha Farid. She is founder and executive director of the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization. She has established 11 orphanages through her nonprofit, 5 in Kabul, 2 in Jalalabad, 2 in Herat, and 2 for Afghan refugees in Pakistan. She was an Afghan refugee herself, spent her childhood at refugee camps in Iran and Pakistan, has dedicated her life to educating and empowering women and girls in Afghanistan. Andisha Farid, thank you very much for joining us today.
Sure, definitely. Hi, Tom.
Hi. And we're all watching the sad story of Malala, who stood up, who became at such a young age a spokesman for girls' rights here. What are you thinking as you watch this from across the border in Afghanistan and we see the Taliban activity in your backyard? Are you afraid this is the future for Afghan girls, Andisha?
Sure, definitely. Of course, Malala's story bleeds everyone's heart when they hear the shooting on such a young girl who's advocate for the very basic rights of for women, that's education. And it's not really the future for Afghan women. It's still the present for Afghan people as well, especially the women. They suffer so much under the situation, either it's by the Taliban or some elements that have connection within the government. Still Afghan women in this situation suffer so badly.
Have Afghan women, Afghan girls, had more freedom in recent years when there's been such a large NATO presence in the country? Has that made a difference, Andisha Farid?
Well, no doubt that some of the things have changed for women since the fall of the Taliban regime. But the thing is, still Afghan women suffer so badly in Afghanistan. Still, no doubt now some women, they can't go to school in the major cities like Kabul or other provinces. And women can go to work in some of the cities, but still it's really hard for them even going to work. Women have been threatened to death. Women have been killed. In the last few months, more than 20 women have been shot to death in Afghanistan with no reason. Either it is no doubt that it has been reported as domestic violence, but if we go in depth, if we go on the route, it doesn't have any connection or anything to do with the domestic violence. Like today, I was listening to the evening news in Kabul that a woman was tortured so badly by her husband's family. She was kept in a dark room for months and months, and she was giving birth to her child because of so many bad things happened to her. Even the baby's malnutrition, the woman, she's in the hospital right now. And that woman, she herself is a baby, if you look at her. And the same case was filed a few months ago, that a woman was terribly horrified by her husband. Mm. Things like this happens against women or to the woman every day in Afghanistan. And the thing is, it even increases the violence against women. in Afghanistan. When you talk with the people and tell them why it increases, the answer which I found among people is that because nobody's accountable for such atrocities in Afghanistan. None of them were punished or have not been put on trial, so that the others get a lesson or the others...
What do you... Andisha, they're in Kabul. What do you think will happen when NATO forces, U.S. troops, leave?
Well, obviously, when with the presence of more than 150,000 troops in Afghanistan, with more than 50, with the presence of more than...
We've lost that line.
Against.
Yes. So what about when they go?
Of course, when they're here, things are happening like this. The violence against women has increased every day. I don't think so that it might make any difference when after 2014, because it's the same scenario. The most important thing is who are in the power right now. Unfortunately, there are some elements still within the government that denies women from their very basic human rights.
What about the possibility of the Taliban returning to power in Afghanistan? Do you see that as a real danger? And what about women's fate in that case?
Afghan people or Afghanistan's gender situation is not like that, that Taliban might take the whole power again. The thing is, still we have, in Afghanistan, we have some elements in the government that they are such misogynist ones. They are the same. The way they look at the woman is same as the Taliban look to the woman. So if after 2014, if the troops leave, I don't think so it makes a huge difference in terms of women's rights. Women still suffer so badly in Afghanistan. And so it might not make that big difference in terms of changing women's situation. It might, because still, Afghan women really suffer so badly at the present situation. So, again, with the presence of more than 140,000 troops.
Yeah,
even
with all those troops there. Andisha Farid, please stand by in Kabul. It's so good to have you with us. And Bina Sawar with me in the studio. Chauncey's calling from Hampton, Virginia. Chauncey, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just have a comment, and it's that it's amazing how her father saw in her the potential that's coming out. Not probably the way he thought or the way she thought, but that she's now a rallying point, not just for Pakistan, but for the world, actually, as we speak this horrific thing that has been done to her, and we also see people who are now standing up, even in the face of those international criminals who are trading as the Taliban. And even the ones that are in the countries where they are, and they're putting themselves at risk. And for my sake, you know, I'm probably one of those 47%ers that Mr. Romney has talked about, but I don't feel like I'm a victim, and I would really be willing to contribute some of whatever I have to any organization that would be working against that, anything as horrible as this continuum against women in Pakistan.
Chauncey, I really appreciate your call. Abina, I mean, this girl is just, she was 11, not even younger when she began speaking up. So impressive. And the idea that somehow these gunmen would feel that they could gain by just shooting her. Speak to those two mentalities. First hers. Where does that incredible poise come from? I mean, that speaks volumes to something going on in Pakistan there. And then the mentality that says, we'll just walk onto the bus and shoot that girl. What's that?
You know, we saw that when they shot Benazir.
Well, yes, you Benazir Bhutto.
Exactly. See, and when Shehla Anjum was talking about talking to Malala about the threat on Malala, and Malala said, "I'm not afraid. Life and death is in the hand of Allah." Those are the exact same words that Benazir said, so many times before she was shot. These are threats that we have been facing in Pakistan. Mm. And like you know, like Chauncey in Virginia just said, it's become a rallying point, not just for Pakistan but for the world. I was yesterday at a vigil at Bunker Hill in Boston, organized by residents of families of Charlestown.
These American Revolutionary War monument with Pakistani or American families?
No, American families, Muslim. Yeah,
a vigil for Malala.
Absolutely,
incredible.
They had a vigil for Malala organized by a woman who works at MIT, and there were people there from, you know, somebody working for some health plan, somebody working for an energy company, fathers, mothers, kids, and several members of the Pakistani community joined them. But it was there, it was organized by the residents of Charlestown.
Apart from expressing that kind of solidarity and admiration, what this is way too broad a question, but what can the world do to try and be supportive here in this very complex military, geopolitical, economic, religious situation?
It is all of those things. And I think the biggest thing that the world can do is to support the democratic political process in Pakistan, support strengthening of a police force, a law and order, to support the law and order situation, the legal situation, so that, like Andisha said, that, you know, the criminals are not charged, tried, and punished. And when you see that kind of, they get away with that kind of impunity, these kind of attacks happen. And Malala is not the first girl to be attacked. I mean, she is the most outspoken and she's become an icon. But other girls and women have been attacked for doing what they do, for going to work, for, you know, going to school or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not everybody gains that prominence.
Well, she gained it in a most striking way and then struck down in a most awful way. And everybody.
And she's alive and we're hoping for her. And that's thank God for
that.
Praying
for survival
for
that she might even thrive one day. Well, heaven knows we're not immune to this. We all saw Gabby Giffords, you know, shot in the head, an American politician.
Yes.
Different circumstances. But, you know,
it's the same mentality of hate, though, Tom. I mean, that's what I link. The thing is that there are people who reject politics and who want to do politics through violence and hatred. And it's the
only
same.
To say, we can't just point fingers here. It has happened, and it's happened in our own country.
Yes.
Different circumstances, but it's happened here. Let's go to Montreal, Canada, and Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. I think you're going to see a lot of posturing on the part of the government, but the government is really inept. What people fail to realize is that the ISI, the military intelligence, has been working with the Taliban all these years. And while they're taking billions of dollars from the Americans, they're really, excuse the expression, screwing the Americans, playing both sides of the coin, and they've literally taken over in the country. They rule the country. The government is inept. You have major tribalism. You have religious factions. You have an extreme high unemployment rate. You have, the inept government.
What's the solution, Elizabeth?
Oh, what's the solution? I don't think there is a solution. I think it has to be evolution rather than a solution. You can go after one person, but that's not going to solve the problem. And the same thing is going to duplicate itself in Afghanistan because the Karzai government is equally inept. But when you have a military and the intelligence faction of the military that's working with the Taliban and supports the Taliban, then you have the government, we'll say the government at large, condoning this kind of an act.
Yeah, Elizabeth, we've got it. Our time is short. I mean, there clearly have been elements within the Pakistani intelligence service who have worked plenty with the Taliban. One more call, Ahmed, also in Montreal. Ahmed, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom. Basically, I just wanted to contradict what the other caller was mentioning, that basically the Islamic tradition has to change. Under Islam, women can get an education, and they are, if we look at the vast majority of the Muslim world, most of the women are educated and at a high university level and all that. So I just want to say Islam does not contradict or does not prevent girls or women to get an education.
And yet, what do we do about these situations where Islam is being used for the oppression of women, Ahmed?
Yeah, that's incorrect. The people have to stand up to what's wrong. Shooting the poor girl is very, very wrong. And trying to prevent girls from having an education, the only thing I can try to say is that maybe there's a high level of poverty and the resources are limited. So they're maybe pushing more education towards the boys who are the ones who are going to support the family.
Ahmed,
maybe.
Thanks for your call. Our time is so short. Andisha Farid in Kabul, we have a caller saying this requires, it won't be revolution, it will be evolution. But that suggests, you know, hundreds, thousands of years. I mean, in your lifetime, can this change for the better in Kabul, in Afghanistan, Andisha?
In Kabul in general, if you see, no doubt, in Kabul city, you see women go to work or they go, girls can go to school or university, but still it's so stressful for them on their way to school because of the suicide bombing might happen on their way to work or to the school or to university. And also, wouldn't like things like this happen many times that women have been shot to death on their way to school or on their way to work or on their way to university. Mm. That's why everyone is in fear. All of them are in fear. Even though they go out and
They go with fear. Andisha Farid with the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization, executive director and founder there. We admire your work. We're grateful to you for your time and thoughts today. Thank you for joining us from Kabul. Veena Sarwar with me in the studio. We've just got 20 seconds here. What's the way here?
I'll just repeat what I said before. Mm-hmm. We need that democratic political process. We need the law and order situation to be fixed. We need the legal system to work. And that's actually what will stop this terrorism.
Well, Malala's on all of our minds today. Her health, her survival. We hope one day her flourishing again and beyond that. Many others in Pakistan, in Afghanistan and beyond. Veena Sarwar, Pakistani journalist joining me in the studio today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for your insights, your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.